a way of escape. Well, the fire department all the time warns you to make sure that your house, you have more than one exit, more than one way of escape in case there's a fire, and to know what the escape routes are. And they tell you even to practice emergency evacuations with your family so that you'll be able to get out if you get your house gets caught on fire. You'll know how to go and where to meet up outside and those kinds of things. Having a way of escape is a pretty important thing at times. Most of the time, we don't need one. But when we do need one, we want to know that we can find that way of escape. Well, God promised us as well that at the times that we needed a way of escape from temptation, He would provide one. And we know that, but sometimes we don't know exactly how to find that way of escape. Well, let's look at this subject then and see if we can figure out how to help ourselves by finding the way of escape that Jesus provides for us. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, beginning in verse 1, Paul talks about the Israelites. God was providing them a way of escape as well. But he talks about the fact that God was not pleased with them because they grumbled and complained and continually lusted after evil things. And so they were scattered in the wilderness. And he warns us. He tells us that these became our example in verse 6, so that we should not lust after the same evil things they lusted after. You know, it's good to learn from somebody else's mistakes instead of having to make those mistakes yourself. And one of the best ways for us to escape temptation is to see the temptations that other people have faced and avoid those situations that got them into trouble. How many young people get themselves into trouble because they go places with people doing things that they, well, it's not really bad. And then they get there and something gets started and there they are in the middle of it, and suddenly they have to face that temptation. If they hadn't gone in the first place, they never would have even been faced with that temptation. But we get ourselves into trouble when we do that. Verse 7 tells us we should beware not to become idolaters as some of them were. And this doesn't necessarily refer to just bowing down to an idol of stone or gold or silver, but anything that we put before God becomes an idol to us. He tells us don't commit sexual immorality as some of them did. In one day, 23,000 of them fell because of sexual immorality. He also says, nor let us tempt Christ in verse 9, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed by serpents. We shouldn't ever do anything that would tempt Christ or tempt God. And then he says in verse 10, nor complain as some of them complained and were destroyed by the destroyer. He says all of these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition. You know, we go back and we read those things, we think, wow, how could those people, they saw Moses and the Red Sea part, they saw all the plagues on Egypt, how could those people have acted that way? Well, we act the same way today. Oh, we didn't see the Red Sea part, and we didn't see the frog popping all over Egypt, and we didn't see the death of the firstborn. But hasn't God blessed us enough? We have Christ. They didn't even have Christ. They didn't even have the Bible to go by. They had to go by what they... We have the recorded record of all the things that happened to them and all of the things that happened to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob before them. All of the things that happened to Joshua and the judges and on through the king, we have that record of all the things that happened to all those folks. And then we have the record of the New Testament, of Jesus' life on earth. We've got all of that. And yet still, we fall into the same mistakes that they made back then. We need to beware. He goes on to say, in verse 12, therefore let him who thinks he stands take heed, lest he fall. In verse 13, he tells us, no temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. Don't think you're the only one that's ever fallen to whatever temptation that was you last fell to. You're not the only one. It is common to man. It's a common thing for mankind to fall to temptation. But God is faithful, he says, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it. Therefore, my beloved, flee from idolatry. But you know the amazing thing is, sometimes when God offers us that way of escape, we don't want to take it. We don't want it. We don't like the choice that He's given us. We don't like the opening that He's given us. We wanted it to be a different way. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were tempted to bow down to an idol. Golden idol, 50 cubits high and 10 cubits wide. A huge idol. And they were tempted, in fact, commanded to bow down to it. You know what their way of escape was? It was simple. Refuse. Oh, well, if we refuse, then the king will respect us and realize what upstanding guys we are and that we won't bow to pressure and we're going to do what's right. No, the king will throw you in a fiery furnace. That was the way of escape. That doesn't sound like the kind of way of escape that we want, though, does it? We don't want to get through thrown in a furnace. And so we would say, well, you know, just this one time I'll bow down. It'll be okay this one time, and I can ask God to forgive me later for that. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they took that way of escape that God offered, didn't they? They bowed down. They refused to bow down. They stood up straight. The king gave them a second chance. They still said, oh no. And they even told him, our God is able to save us, but if he doesn't, we still won't bow down. Now they had some dedication to God. Sometimes the way of escape for us may mean that we lose a relationship with somebody. It may mean that someone ridicules us. It may mean that somebody talks about us behind our back. But that's the way of escape. We need to understand that the way of escape is not always going to be pleasant. You know, if you were at the bottom of Death Valley, there are several ways of escape out of Death Valley. None of them are very pleasant. It's hot, it's dry, it's rocky, and it's steep, and getting out of that valley is difficult. But staying in that valley will mean you die because there's no water and there's no food. So sometimes we have to realize that when our soul is at stake, when we're looking at the choice between sin against God, which will cost us eternity in heaven, or physical pain and suffering, emotional pain and suffering, we have to take the choice of the better of those two. And we have to weigh what that is. But these things happened to Israel as examples to us. But now we're in the last days. We're in the end of the ages. We're in, as Paul calls it before Timothy, the latter days. That's where we are today, in the latter times. This is it. There aren't going to be any more days after these. Now, I don't mean that it's going to be the end of this week or next month. But this is it, the Christian age. This is the last one. At the end of this age, Christ is returning to take those who are His back to heaven with Him and to enforce God's will and God's punishment upon those who have rejected Him. And so here we are. We need to understand some things about these examples that we see here in 1 Corinthians 10. The first thing is that these examples show us that we can fall. Now, it's amazing that there are a lot of people in the religious world who still are out there preaching and teaching that once somebody becomes a Christian, they can never fall. But Paul is very clear here in 1 Corinthians 10 that we should learn from their mistakes so we don't fall like they did. We see that some of these individuals became idolaters. Some of them committed sexual immorality. Some of them tempted Christ, and certainly they complained. And we see that that was sin against God for them to do all of those things. They fell, and we can fall today. Take heed, lest you fall. Let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. Well, why would Paul write, take heed lest you fall, if you couldn't fall? That doesn't make sense, does it? Of course he wouldn't have written that unless it was a possibility. Not only a possibility, but if we don't take heed, it's a probability. A high probability. If you're not watching where you're going, you're going to run into something, aren't you? You're going to trip over something. You're going to step in a hole. Something's going to happen to you if you're not paying attention. And so Paul warns us to pay attention. So these examples show us that we can fall. But they also show us that we don't have to fall. And this is the encouraging part. There is a way of escape. We don't have to fall. All temptation is common to man. And understanding that means that we also understand that no temptation is superhuman. In other words, that means that no temptation is so far beyond human ability that it can't be fought. It's not superhuman. The source of temptation, yes, the devil is superhuman. He's beyond human ability. But God will not allow him to tempt us in a way that does go beyond human ability. Not only that, but as Christians, he specifically says, not only will he not allow Satan to tempt you beyond human ability, but he won't allow God to tempt you beyond your ability. That means that Satan's temptations to one person may be more limited than his temptations toward another person. Because one person can handle more difficult temptations, so God allows that person to face those more difficult temptations. Another person may be very weak and still growing and may not be able to handle a really strong temptation, and so God does not allow that. The other thing that we understand then is, since all temptation is common to man, no temptation is unique. I don't care what your temptation that you fight with and struggle with more than others is, and all of us have one thing that we just struggle with more than anything else. And I don't know what your biggest struggle is, but whatever it is, you're not the only one. It's not unique. If your biggest struggle is gossip, oh, a lot of people struggle with that. If your biggest struggle is lying, a lot of people struggle with that. If your biggest struggle is losing your temper and getting angry, a lot of people struggle with that. If your biggest struggle is sexual temptation, a lot of people struggle with that. If it's alcohol, a lot of people struggle with that. If it's a drug, a lot of people struggle with that. If it's laziness, a lot of people struggle. You get the pattern here? Whatever your temptation is that you struggle with, a lot of people struggle with that. It's not unique. And it's not beyond our ability to handle. No temptation is too terrifying. All temptation, of course, falls into three categories: the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. John lays those out for us in 1 John. But those are the same things that Eve was tempted by. They're the same things that Satan tempted Christ by. Every temptation is going to fall into one of those three categories. The lust of the eyes, you see something you want. The lust of the flesh, there's something you physically desire. The pride of life, you see something that will lift you above your fellow man. And you want to be lifted up in some way. But then we see that God is faithful. God never wanders off and forgets about us. He never goes on vacation or takes a nap or is away from the phone and leaves us all alone with the devil. He never does that. You look at the situation that we read about with Job, and there's God watching, asking Satan, okay, how's this go? What do you think about Job? And then they keep having this conversation back and forth about how things are going. God's watching all along the way. And then finally, at the end of the book, God appears and lets them know that He was there all along. He hadn't gone anywhere, but He was there watching, limiting Satan, testing Job, trusting Job would be able to handle the situation, and not letting Satan go beyond what he said. Do you remember that? The first thing God said was, okay, you can destroy all of the things that he has and take his children, whatever, but you can't touch Job. Guess what? Satan couldn't touch Job. Then Satan comes, oh, well, it's because if you would let me make him sick, then he'd deny you. And so God says, okay, you can make him sick. You can make him suffer physically, but you can't kill him. See, God was always in charge. God always set the limits. And Satan, as disobedient as he was, and still is, cannot go beyond the limits that God sets. Is the devil more powerful than us? Yes. Is the devil more powerful than God? No. He doesn't have a chance against God. When God says, you don't go beyond this, then Satan can't go beyond that. That's something, isn't it? Because God tells us a whole bunch of things. He says, don't go beyond this. And we go, so what? I'm going to go anyway. Satan can't do that. When God sets limitations on Satan, he must abide by them. He limits the temptation. He doesn't allow temptation to be too enticing, too forceful, too pleasing, too ego-boosting, too appealing, too satisfying, too self-exalting, too stimulating, too attractive, too fulfilling, too promising, or too arousing. He never allows the temptation to be that. Now, you say, well, if that's the case, why do we fall to temptation? We should never fall if God's limiting all these things. James gives us the answer to that. We sin when we are led away by our own lust and enticed. That's when we sin. It's not that Satan has this ability to overcome us and overpower us. It's us. We put ourselves in that situation. We intentionally go where the sin is. And then Satan doesn't have to tempt us hard at all. We've done all the hard work for him. We've gotten ourselves right there in the midst of it. God is faithful and he knows what and how much we can bear. And God provides a way of escape. He will give us strength to get through the temptation. James 4:7 tells us, submit to God and resist the devil and he will flee from you. You ever thought about that? You can make the devil run away if you'll resist him. You see, the Bible describes the devil as a lion. But have you ever watched the Nature Channel? Learning Channel, Discovery Channel, one of those channels with the animal shows on it, and you watch the lions? Have you ever noticed that the lion doesn't go after the strongest one in the herd? The lion goes after the weaklings goes after the ones that are already sick, that are already down, that is who Satan is going after. That's why it says he's seeking whom he may devour. He knows he can't just devour everybody. So he's looking for the one who's vulnerable. He's looking for the one who's weak. He's looking for somebody who's already sick so he can jump on them. And I'm not talking about physical illness, but spiritually weak and spiritually sick. That's who he's looking for. So sometimes God gives us the strength to get through the temptation. Sometimes he gives us a way out. Sometimes that way out is an opportunity to turn around and run ourselves. James just said that if we resist the devil, he'll flee from us. But sometimes, the Bible also tells us we need to flee from him. We need to realize when we're facing a temptation that we're not up to that day. When we realize, hey, I'm not able to handle that right now. I've got to get out of here. 2 Timothy 2:22, Paul tells Timothy, flee youthful lust. You know, youthful lust can be pretty strong and pretty powerful. Some of you may not remember when you were young enough to have youthful lust. Oh no. But and you ask these young people, and the temptations they face, they seem overwhelming to them at times. So those of us who've already gone through that, come on, you can have, you know, peer pressure, that's not that big a deal. And, oh, you know, what? That's not important stuff. But to them, it's their whole world. And it seems overwhelming to them sometimes. And so the Bible tells us to flee those youthful lusts. We need to flee from the love of money. 1 Timothy 6:10-11 says, for the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. But you, O man of God, flee these things. Now in both of these passages, there is something to run from and something to run to. He tells, flee youthful lust. Flee from these things like the love of money. But pursue righteousness. Follow after righteousness. Chase it down. You see, if you're running toward righteousness, then the temptations are going to be behind you. And you know, there's a reason God made us without eyes in the back of our head. If you're running toward Him and you can see righteousness set before you, then you can't see the temptations that are behind you. And they won't tempt you as strongly because you can't see them. You might be able to remember them. You might think of them, but you can't see them. And then we should flee idolatry, 1 Corinthians 10:14 tells us. And we should also flee from sexual immorality, 1 Corinthians 6:18-20. Do you remember Joseph? Joseph found himself in a situation where he was being enticed as a young man by an older woman. Now, there was no indication about this woman, whether she was attractive or not. We don't even know how tempted Joseph was. But he knew that to do anything with her would have been a sin against God. And because of that, when she tried to grab him and forced him to come with her, he ran. He left his coat with her and got out of there. Now, let me ask you something. When her husband came home and found out the lie that she told, believed her lie, and had Joseph arrested and put in jail, do you think that for a minute Joseph thought, you know, if I had just done what she wanted. I'm sure the devil planted that thought in his mind at some point. You know, you should have just done what she wanted. She never would have told her husband. Everything would be okay. You'd still be working in Potiphar's house. But what if he had? What if he'd taken the easy way instead of the way out that God provided to run? If he'd taken the easy way and stayed with her, everyone would have died in that famine. You realize that? The whole nation of Egypt would have been dead. His family would have been dead. Because if he'd have been in Potiphar's household instead of in that prison, he wouldn't have been able to interpret the dreams of the baker and the butler. And the butler wouldn't have remembered that when Pharaoh had his dream. And he wouldn't have then been called to Pharaoh to interpret Pharaoh's dream. And he wouldn't have been able to tell Pharaoh about the drought that was coming and the famine that was coming. And Pharaoh wouldn't have been able to appoint him to take care of it. Think about that. If Joseph had tried to go a different way in that circumstance, what were the consequences of that? Now, I know God would have found a way to save His people. Because God does that. He always finds a way to save His people. But Joseph was God's plan A in that circumstance. But Joseph had to be faithful. Joseph had to do what was right. And doing what was right meant running away from that situation, but it also meant having to go through prison. Now see, we don't think of those things, and we talked about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego earlier. We don't think of those things as ways out. No, that's not a way out. A way out means I come out of it smelling like roses. A way out means I come out of it looking good. Well, in the long run, that does happen. But temporarily, things may get worse before they get better if we follow God's way out. We've got to understand that. But we've got to be willing to suffer through a little in order to get the long-term gain. That's part of maturity. Children want what they want right now. But as we mature, we learn that the best things in life are worth waiting for. That the best things in life can be enjoyed better under the right circumstances. Some people don't understand that. They don't understand when they're 16 and in love that God designed sex for marriage and that it'll be better if you just wait till then. But they think, oh, it'd be so good now. It seems so right. There are even songs, you know, it feels so right, it can't be wrong. Well, you know, the Bible tells us the heart is deceitful above all things. Your feelings aren't to be trusted. But understand that God knows what He's doing. He knows you'll be better in the long run for following His plan. Listen to those who have made some of those mistakes in their past. And they'll tell you, oh, if I had it to do over again. Now don't listen to the people who are still out there in sin because they still haven't figured it out yet. But you talk to some folks that lived in sin and came out of sin and came to Christ. Oh, if I could do it over again. If I could, I'd want to be with Christ from the beginning and follow that path from the start. The other blessing that we have as Christians, however, is that even if we do fall, even if we fail to take the way of escape that God has provided, He has a second plan. He has provided us another way to escape the guilt and the eternal consequences of that sin, and that is, of course, Jesus Christ. Jesus died because we fail, because we sin, because we don't always take the way out. But you think Adam and Eve. Eve had the way out. Adam had the way out. Either one of them. But you know, Adam particularly, his way out would have meant separation from Eve because she had already eaten the fruit. And so Adam chose to be with Eve rather than to be with God. He made a choice that his wife and his relationship with her was more important than his relationship with God. Because of that, that relationship was severed. And they were cast out of the garden. But he had a way out. He didn't have to eat that fruit. Eve had a way out. She didn't have to eat that fruit. She didn't have to be tempted by the devil. She could have gone back and asked God, well, God, is this true now? The serpent over here is telling me a different story.
So she didn't. She just took the serpent's word for it. But Jesus died because we do sin. If we didn't ever sin, if nobody ever sinned, Jesus wouldn't need to die. We'd all still be living in the Garden of Eden. And it'd be a pretty crowded garden, I imagine, with 6 billion people in it. But you think about it. Hebrews 10:10-14 says, We have been sanctified through the offering of the body of Jesus Christ once for all. Verse 14, he says, for by one offering he has perfected forever those who are being sanctified. He can wash those mistakes away. That doesn't mean, however, that we won't still have some consequences for those sins. He can remove the eternal consequence, which is separation from God. He can remove that. But let me tell you, young people, you go out there and you mess around with drugs and you get some brain damage as a result of that. You can be forgiven of it, but the brain damage won't go away. You go out there and you shoot up some drugs and catch AIDS as a result. You can be forgiven of that. But that AIDS isn't going to go away. You go out there, young men, and you get a young lady pregnant, or young ladies, you go out there and you get a young man that gets you pregnant, you can be forgiven of that. But that baby's not going to go away. Not for about 20 years. We've got to understand, there are going to be consequences when we sin, when we don't take the way that God has provided. We can be forgiven. But some of the consequences are irreversible, if that's a word. Jesus died for those who had and were fallen, Romans 5:8 tells us. And Jesus died to save us from the result of our failures, Romans 5:9-11 tells us. We were enemies of God, and we were reconciled through the death of His Son. Back in a relationship with God. God warns us against sin. He warns us time and time again. He tells us what the sins are. He shows us how Satan works. Time and again tells us to stay away from it.